originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Once again, happy to have you with us on Sirius 219, XM 206, and all of you streaming us worldwide on your computer or mobile device on our website. That's horseracingradio.net. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, and longtime trainer extraordinaire.
Thank you.
How do you like that? I had to come up with something different here tonight.
I do. I like it.
legendary Jude Feld.
Infamous.
Well, we are with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass. And JT, looking forward to another fun visit over the course of the next hour here on Trainer Talk tonight.
Yeah, we've been waiting a long time to get Larry Ravelli on the air.
Good things come to those who wait. And yes, we are delivering Mr. Larry Ravelli here this evening. And, you know, Larry is somebody who has had an awful lot of success throughout much of his career, but certainly recently. He's accumulated 1,173 career victories. His runners have earned more than $20 million in purses. And he recently, how about this, set a new record for wins by a trainer in a single season at Arlington, surpassing his good friend, Wayne Catalano. And Larry is with us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry, appreciate the time, my friend.
You got it, guys. How you doing?
Good, good. Congratulations on this role that you've been on lately. Well done.
Thank you. Yep, well, we enjoy it while we can, right?
What's the secret, man? How you do it?
spotting your horses, you know, putting them in the right places and having the stock to do it. You know, I'm pretty familiar with the Arlington circuit and the Illinois circuit, and every year we come prepared with, you know, mid-level horses to allowance horses, to stake horses, to claiming horses, so we got all our bases covered usually going into that meet.
How about knocking Catalano off of his perch at the top of the list at Arlington? How cool was that?
I just got done talking to him just not too long ago. I wasn't really, you know, trying to do, wasn't even, you know, focusing on that until it got close, and then people started bringing it up, and then we made a little bit of a surge at the end, but busting his chop because he did it in 92 days and I did it in 72 days. I said, you're lucky I wasn't full throttle with you rolling. And you're pooping around back. And he goes, son, I taught you this and I taught you that. So it's good fun. And it's something to talk about for a minute, but then you move on and you got, you know, horses like the Tabulator, and we're getting ready for the Breeders' Cup. So all that stuff is in the past, and we're trying to move forward and do bigger and better things. That's what Wayne always throws in my face. Call me, son, when you win 2 Breeders' Cups. You got it, buddy. I traded all these titles for 2 Breeders' Cups. I'm with you.
Hey, he's kind of a mean guy, Catalano. But we got the Dale Romans and Bill Mott thing going on at Churchill Downs. That was kind of fun to talk about, too. But you're right. This is a game of what have you done for me lately.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I have really good owners. I'm fortunate. Vince Foley at Richard Raven and newly acquired Carolyn Wilson. And it's good when you have, you know, when you have good owners. I mean, it just makes your job easier. And, you know, they understand that most of the time, you know, you get a horse that's valued at X amount of dollars, a lot of times it doesn't work out, you know. And more times than not, you end up running them for less than what, you know, you paid. And hopefully you can get a few wins and recoup some of the money and move on. And that handicaps a lot of trainers that, I mean, that are probably better trainers than their stats indicate, just because they don't have the opportunity to, you know, horse needs to run at a certain level to be competitive and win, and they don't let you because it's, you know, named after their daughter or their favorite horse or something, you know what I mean? And then it just handcuffs the guy training the horse, and, you know, what do? You fire the owner, and then you've been there out of business. You know, it's hard, and you got to be fortunate to have owners like I do, and I am fortunate. I also have, you know, very good staff. I've always kept myself, you know, in really good company as far as that goes, and it seems to be working.
Do you find it goes hand in hand when you're winning races all the time? The owners listen to you more, and they'll respect your opinion a little bit?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, most of the time it's, you know, you hope to, you don't ever have one come up and bite you. But when you run 300-400 horses in a year, and you claim one for 50, and it runs bad today, you claim it, but it's doing okay. I mean, what do? Do you run it for 50, or do you run it for 80, or do you run it for 30? You know, I mean, it's what's next and where it is and what the timing is, and I'm really, really, I pay a lot of attention to that, and we'll go wherever we got to go to win a race, you know what I mean, no matter where. If I think a horse is sound and it's good and it's doing good, but it's just not good enough to win at this track, we'll take it to that track and you know, put it in lesser company and win. Then we move on from there. You know what I mean? And when it's time to go, sometimes it's time to go. We turn them out. I turn a lot of my horses out. They run hard during the summer at Arlington. Turn them out for the next, bring them back for next Arlington. I got a bunch of horses like that just like the Poly track, and they're 6-7 years old, and they won 4 or 5 races in a row, and, you know, they don't like the dirt, so I don't take them to Hawthorne. I don't run them at Keeneland. So they get turned back out in Ocala. I have a lady that helps me out there in Ocala. Her name is Dr. Jean White. She works for the Ocala Equine Hospital. She's a big part of our operation. Turnouts, foals, all our mares and our homebred and stuff. So, you know, it's definitely orchestrating a big team that's pretty good. And I tip my hat to these guys like Fletcher and Askison that can do it. You know, they got 50, 60 head at every major circuit. It's just, it's unbelievable how well they do. It's very easy to not do well when I do my best work when I'm there. You know what I mean? It's hard for me to be in 5 places at once, but these guys, they got it down, the super trainer guys. Pretty good.
Talking with trainer Larry Ravelli on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Larry, you mentioned like turning your horses out and giving them a little bit of a break. That's something that we don't see an awful lot of anymore because of all the racing that we have year round in the sport. How important is it to be able to give horses a break and let them just be a horse for a while?
Bah, greatest thing ever, tell you the truth. It really is the greatest thing for a horse, no doubt. But time off means money to most owners, you know what I mean? And we're turning them out, and they're not running, they're not generating any income. And it's just, like I said, you just got to have the right guys. The right guys with the right trainer. There's certain, you know, it's just, I do it. They never never even bat an eye at it. And we've been successful. We've always come back and done really well, so, which I'm sure is part of the reason. But, you know, when I say I'm going to turn them out, they're okay, whatever, you know, and it's great. But instead of the why, and we need to run this horse and this and that, and we paid this, and now it's not going to that, and, you know, this owner and my partner, and he's pissed off, and everybody, you know, it's like you got all those scenarios. And when you have good people that you're training for, you don't have those scenarios, which, like I said, it makes it a lot easier.
Do you find when somebody comes and asks you to train for them, do you go over your philosophy with them and kind of explain how it is?
Absolutely. And, you know, you kind of know by talking to them. You probably, you know what I mean? You could, like, and I'm not going to mention names, but I acquired a New York owner, and was always going to, we're going to get together. We got together and it didn't work out. I was like, oh, man. I'm like, I said, dude, I said, but I don't think we're going to, this ain't going to, you know, run him here. I called this jock. I want to put this guy on. He's, you know, I'm like, oh boy, you know. And you think you want to be with who you want to be with until you're with them, you know. And you're like, ah, maybe it's not going to work out.
Yeah, what
you know, when you work so hard at what you do, and you know that you're good at what you do, and you don't necessarily have to wave your own flag or anything. But then when you know someone wants to, you know, it's their horse, they own it. And they think that they can manage a horse like that. You know, they're successful in whatever. Most owners have money, and they're successful in their business, and they're able to play this game because, you know, it's definitely the sport of kings for a reason. You have to, you know, be doing well at some point in your life to afford to have 30 racehorses or 12 racehorses. And, you know, if you're successful in the business, they think it's going to transfer over to because they got a sheep number, and this jock is 30%, and we need to run them long. And my friend said, put blinkers on them, and, you know, then you're listening going, oh, wow, okay. maybe I don't want this guy, you know what I mean? Maybe we don't want, we just need to go back to the way we were. But, you know, that's, like I said, it goes back to just, you know, you got to manage everybody, your help, the owners, the horses, this.
Yeah, the horses are the easy part. It's the humans you got to deal with that ruin the game. But you know, it was always puzzling to me when I was training how a guy that was sitting behind his desk in New Jersey knew exactly what I should do with a horse that he hasn't seen in 3 months.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. You're right. It's a lot of whether you win or lose. I mean, it's easy. They can make you lose so easy, and there's a million ways to lose a race as it is.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, being a trainer, sometimes you win the race when you enter. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, the better horse you have, the more the owners want input, right? Charlie Whittingham taught me, you know, when you got a good horse, the owner wants to tell you everything. If you got some bum, they stay out of your way.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Well, one horse who has done his fair share of winning is the Tabulator, and you brought his name up just a short time ago, Larry. He's a 2-year-old son of Dialed In. He's a perfect 3-for-3, and people will remember him for winning the Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill on September 16th. You mentioned pointing for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Fill us in. How's the Tabulator doing?
I just worked today 5/8 of a mile with one of his stablemates, Well Abled, who was in the Breeders' Cup last year. And had a couple setbacks. He was undefeated going into there, but it was kind of a long shot trying him on the turf. And it worked really, really good. I think that horse is going to get a big, big shot in that race. He's definitely a special horse at this time in his career. He couldn't be doing any better, knock on wood. So we're just keeping him happy and keeping him fit. I'm going to give him one work before I put him on the plane. I'm sending him with Wesley Ward, one of my buddies, and we're going to fly out on the 22nd, I believe, out of Keeneland and get to Del Mar and then give them one short prep work over the track. And hopefully we make a good showing.
So this isn't your
nice
first
horse, though. Really, really nice horse. Bought him at the OBS sale, I believe, for $460,000 for Carolyn Wilson. And her and I have been very successful with these sale purchases the last 3 years, so hopefully we can keep it going.
Yeah, and this isn't your first rodeo going to the Breeders' Cup. You've been there, you mentioned last year, but you were there in 2015 with Cocked and Loaded, who was very impressive and looked good in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. What have you kind of learned over those past 2 years and those other experiences that might be helping you this year with the Tabulator?
You just have to, you know, I'm never a get nervous type of guy. Like, about, I'm always, you know, pretty confident of where I'm going. But, you know, I never, ever want to be the 87-to-1 shot in any race. You know what I mean? Whether it's on a big stage or a little stage. But it's, you learn, you know, you prepare. I've had, like, it's a little bit easier for me because I've had, you know, My uncle Jimmy DeVito, he's run a bunch of big races before when I was growing up, and Wayne and Wesley, and, you know, they all give you pieces of advice as you're, you know, going through this. I've trained for 17, 18 years, but just in the last 5 years that I've been starting to, you know, acquire better horses, but it's given me the opportunity to run in these bigger races. And being the third year around, I just think that more than anything is having a healthy, fresh horse. You know, a lot of these guys want to try to run and prep before the prep, and I think a good 5 weeks in between the race, 6 weeks even, I mean, it's perfect once they've been running and getting them there in a time, you know, getting them there a little bit, a week or two, at least 2 weeks before the race is a must. Now, I know Baffert and these guys, they ship them in the day before, and it works. It's either ship in the day before or get there 2 weeks ahead of time. That's my philosophy anyways.
Well, I think you do very well with your shippers. I mean, wherever you send a horse, I always give it an extra look because you place them so well. But going into Del Mar, it's good to get there early because the weather is a little bit different. It's a heavier, type of air, and I think that's a great idea to get there 2 weeks in advance.
Yeah, I mean we're kind of at the mercy of the flights, you know, but it's going to be, I mean, that's what we wanted to do anyways, and it worked out good that the plane is leaving on the 22nd, so it'll give us good amount of time to do exactly what you said, get him a work over, get him his air, get him his legs, and make sure that he's settled in good.
You know, Larry, I read a story as I was prepping for the show, and it was about Cocked and Loaded and your first trip to the Breeders' Cup, but it was kind of a fun story that went back to Cocked and Loaded's first career start at Keeneland when he was trained by John Hancock. Tell us that story.
It was Wesley had a horse in the race, of course. You know, we're sitting around just BSing and talking, and all of a sudden, let's call Wesley, see if he likes his horse. Wesley, you like your horse? Love him. Can't lose. Monster. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we all lose our money, right? We bet. And then we're paging through to see to look at the horses that beat him. But I knew before the race that the horse was for sale because Steve Leving, who's Valdivia's agent, longtime friend of mine, longer time friend of Wesley, actually had Wesley's book when he was riding in Chicago when he was younger, told me that this horse could be bought, watch him run, John Hancock sells all his horses, blah, blah, blah. Well, before they got the saddle off the horse, we're calling John Hancock trying to buy the horse, you know, trying to get a price, and we put the deal together all within like 24 hours. And it was the way that horse won his first race, a little bit smaller than I'd like, but, you know, if you go to these sales and to buy a made horse that's ready to run, that has a shot to be successful, even if we knew we were only going to get all our money when he was two and he never grew another inch, you know, the value was there for the price that we paid for the horse, and we got a lot of it back winning at Belmont in the Tremont the first time we ran him back in 3 weeks. I think it was 250 then, I think the race was. And then he won the Iroquois, and he put a pretty good showing on it in the Breeders' Cup. He ran fifth. He was, you know, that's what I think, you know, Nyquist and those horses were in there. He was up against it, but he really ran a good race. Ended up losing the horse and making about $500,000 with him, which was over the, you know, well over the price that we paid for him. So we did well with the horse as far as financially, but, you know, ask any owner that's big time in the game if, you know, would you spend $300,000 or $400,000 to run in the Breeders' Cup? And every one of them would say yes. You know, if you're guaranteed to get a shot, that, you know, to line up for $2 million, it would be a no-brainer. So, you know, that situation worked out good. Hancock usually does good. He's always got one or two diamonds in the rough every now and again where they jump up and they're good horses, and he doesn't pay much for them. And, you know, he does a good job with those type of horses, and once again, it goes back to your owners. You got to have the owners that are going to let you pick out what ones you want. I like to buy athletes. I'm more towards the athlete than the bloodlines, just for the fact you go to a yearling sale and they're $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $700,000. You never even seen them move. You know what I mean? Versus going to a 2-year-old training sale and you got maybe a lesser bred horse, but he's a big, good-looking athlete. He's sound, and then you can take it from there. Now, even, you know, 70% of them don't work out and 30% of them do, and that's a good number, you know.
Well, you're more of a 2-year-old in training guy than a yearling guy, huh?
Oh yeah, I probably bought one or two yearlings, and now I raise them. We I have a probably 14 homebreds that I'm partners with Vinny, Patricia Hope, Vince Foley, and Richard Raven on, that's a whole different, you know, whole different ball game for us. None of them really have made it to the big dance, but we've done really, really well with our homebreds. You know, they always win at Arlington, and the owners are always here, and you get an extra bonus because they're Illinois breds, and you know, they win $200,000-$300,000 every year, all these horses. So, I mean, you know, for their maybe 2 year span that I have them, you know, making most of their money. And, you know, we spend between $7,500 and $15,000 on the stud fee. So it's not really a, you know, breeding to Uncle Mo or anything like that where you got to have a champion. Otherwise, you're never going to recoup your money. We got a lot of bases covered, which is good. That's why we, you know, we're successful in Illinois because we got the homebreds, we got the statebreds, we have the cheaper claimers because these homebreds and these statebreds, if they're not that good, they end up being cheaper claimers. We run them where we can, where they need to be to win, and you got, you know, you got every base covered, which is what you need to do if you're going to like break a record or be leading trainer at some venue. Like Wayne said, I'd like to win a Breeders' Cup or two or three, and probably would trade in some of my titles for it for sure. So we're trying to do everything. You know what I mean? We do everything, which is nice. You know, we got owners that will buy a real expensive one, and we got guys that'll breed one and, you know, run them for $10,000, and they're just as excited.
Yeah, talking with Larry Ravelli here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Larry, people aren't going to realize, as they hear you tell that story, they're not going to realize that you've had a lot of success, not just as a trainer, but as an owner and as a breeder. So, spend just a little bit of time talking about your farm and that side of your business.
We board all our horses, like I said, at the Dr. Jean White's Ocala Equine Hospital. I mean, she works for Ocala Equine Hospital, and we board them all at her farm. We use a lady, Carolyn Webster, does a great job breaking our two-year-olds. And that's a whole different racket. I mean, that's, you know, you got the mare that colicked and lost the foal, and then this, you know, that's a whole different line of disappointments, so to say, before you can even get them to the track. It's a lot of time and effort by those people. It's really out of my hands. We just write the checks. They take care of it because, you know, you can only do so much as a trainer. I can only be so many places. And to be honest with you, I'm not in tune to what it is versus training a kind of, you know, I mean, a two-year-old in training and an older horse. And I give all the credit to those guys because it's not an easy job keeping everybody, you know, keeping all the young horses, you know, healthy and deciding when to stop on them when you're breaking them or they're getting a little shin sore, so back off. Or, you know, and once again, it goes back to the owners that, okay, do whatever you got to do. You know, when the other guys got, you know, oh, we need this horse ready by April for Keeneland because we're going to run them because we told the partners it would be ready. And, you know, what do you do? You know, it's like, okay, great. We're going to ruin the horse because the partners aren't, you know, it's like, it's all those different situations that come up that I fortunately these days don't have to deal with, which makes it our operation more successful.
You know, you've talked a couple of times, too, about your relationship with other trainers, Wesley Ward in particular, Wayne Catalano. We mentioned that friendship that you have with Wayne and that camaraderie that you have with those other guys. That's not uncommon with horse trainers. I think about Todd Pletcher and Kieran McLaughlin, who are very good friends, and they like to cut up a little bit, and they like to compete against each other. Talk a little bit about that camaraderie and that rivalry and how much fun that can be when you have friends that are doing the same thing.
Well, in this business, there's very few. There's less friends. They can congratulate you, but they don't like you whipping their ass. they might say congratulations, but you know, as a trainer, that there's guys that say it and don't mean it, and there's very few that do, and Wayne and Wesley are the few that do, and I know this. I've known them for a long time, so it's when we're battling together, like Wesley and I got a horse running tomorrow against each other at Keeneland, and I think he's going to get the better of me. But you know, there's always a joke or something involved, you know, with when we're doing that stuff or whoever wins, and we're genuinely happy for each other. Same with Wayne. I mean, I know his family really well, and we've we've been in the same circuit forever, and when he wins, I'm happy for him, and he knows it, and I know when I win. As far as everybody else in the game, you got to try to be nice to everybody, but the competitive part of it, and you know, it's a lot of jealousy in this game, whether you're doing good, bad, you know what I mean. A lot of people, they want to knock everybody who's on top, or they want to not, you know, this guy's doing that and that guy's doing this, and oh yeah, he's got it made, and this guy, you know, it's still hard to win a race no matter what you do. There's a million ways to lose, and there's only one way to win. And you know, I tip my hat off to everybody who can win a race, because the general public just takes it for granted. Oh, he claimed it for 20, he ran it for 12, and he won. That's not that hard. It doesn't mean they have to win. You know, you claim him, you don't like him, he's not going good, you got to patch him up, and you win, and it's one of your best training jobs, and you had to drop the horse and have to do it, you know?
Yeah, that's...
People don't recognize it, they don't realize it. They just open the program and go, oh, look at this. Catalano's dropping one for Calabrese again. Oh, great, yeah, they do that all the time. It's really, you know, that doesn't mean they have to win. And you know that, too, is from training horses. That doesn't mean they have to win. I've done it a million times, and they don't win.
Yeah. Well, it's so hard. People don't realize how hard it is to be a trainer. That's the one thing that I've never understood about racing fans and sometimes owners too, is they don't realize how difficult a job it really is. And you've got to get up early every morning, 7 days a week. You got to take care of these horses. You're doing the best you can all the time. And I think that's one of the reasons that trainers can get upset with their clients sometimes, is their clients act like it's just a game run on paper. You know,
and it's
so frustrating sometimes, because you're doing everything in your power, everything that you know, your years of experience, to get this horse to the winner's circle, and then they want to fight with you.
Yep, you're right. You're 100% right, because the guy sitting behind the desk, he's got a sheet number, and someone told him, you know, that these sheets are the Bible, and we got to go by the sheets. He ran a 10, so he's gonna, you know, you're 100% right. I take those buyers and the sheet numbers and everything just with a very, very, you know, little bit of an aid, but not much. I look at class. I know the type of horses that most of them are running against. And back in the day when we didn't have any buyers, we went by class, right? So this horse ran against this horse. You know, he ran for 20,000. He got beat by this horse. And that's the way we used to handicap 20 years ago before they had all this stuff. But it's – Yeah, you're right about that. With on the paper, they're supposed to be this, and it's not easy to win, that's for sure.
Larry Rivelli with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. We're going to get to a short break. We'll come back and continue this visit. Matter of fact, Larry, at one point, growing up, said, maybe I'll do something different than train horses. We'll tell you about that when we come back. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. The October sale at Fasic Tipton, featuring nearly 1,500 yearlings by the nation's top sires. Recent Grade 1 graduates include Annals of Time.
Annals of Time, a striking one.
Girvin.
And Girvin gets up to win by a nostril.
And More Spirit.
More Spirit has dominated the Met Mile.
Plus other prominent greatest stakes winners. Your last chance to buy yearlings in 2017 is at the October sale at Fasic Tipton, October 23rd through the 26th in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you be?
Join us for Jim McKay Maryland Million Day, Saturday, October 21st at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races. It's a celebration of Maryland's horses and lots of fun for all ages. First post is 12:15 with 11 exciting races. And don't miss the first annual hat contest with 3 categories and wonderful prizes. Join in the fun today at Laurel Park. For more information, visit MarylandMillion.com or MarylandRacing.com.
Stuart Morris possesses 30 years of experience in the thoroughbred business and started consigning horses on his own just 2 years ago. Already, one of his sales graduates, Malagasy, found himself on the Kentucky Derby trail and now has 3 two-year-old stakes winners in 2017. Tremont winner He Hate Me, undefeated Kelly's Humor, winner of the Ellis Park Debutante, and Pacific Gal, who won Monmouth's Sorority Stakes. Those 3 coming from just 65 yearlings sold by Stuart Morris last year. Visit the Stuart Morris consignments at upcoming sales to find your next winner.
Bloom racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
Earn 25% more for every win when you send your horse to Virginia by taking advantage of the new Virginia Certified Program. Simply send your horse to reside in Virginia for 6 months prior to December 31st of their two-year-old year and be eligible for a 25% owner's bonus for wins in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and West Virginia, regardless of state-bred status. There's value in Virginia with the new Virginia Certified Program. Visit vabred.org for details.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The tabulator comes on to take the lead right outside the quarter pole. Smart Remark is back into second. Ebon was in tight off the turn. Mo Diddley fights on with Hollywood Star. Ten City comes wide, top of the stretch. The tabulator in front by three lengths with one furlong to go. Hollywood Star is going to try and run him down in the final furlong. Ebon is back on track toward the inside in Ten City. But it's the tabulator in front by 2.5, wandering to the outside. Hollywood Star switches back inside. Time is running out. The tabulator continues to drift. But the tabulator has won it. 3/4 of a length on the wire. Hollywood Star ran out of racetrack, finishing second. Ten City was third, and Ebon was fourth.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, coming to you from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. That was Travis Stone with the call of the Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill Downs on September 16th. The tabulator remaining undefeated and now on his way to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Del Mar. Of course, we'll be there as well as your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships, now 11 years running, and proud to be able to bring you that coverage coast to coast and worldwide here on the network. You can go ahead and visit our website, horseracingradio.net, for a complete Breeders' Cup week schedule. We'll be there all week long with shows, interviews with trainers and jockeys and owners, and then, of course, all that race coverage on Friday and Saturday. All the race coverage presented by our friends at visitbarbados.org. What do you think, JT? The tabulator looks pretty tough.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah. Gives us somebody else to root for at Breeders' Cup time.
I know. And we are rooting for trainer Larry Ravelli here on the program tonight as he is our special guest. He, of course, the trainer of the tabulator. And Larry, I mentioned before the commercial break that when you were growing up, you thought maybe there might be another career that you could excel in, and you came pretty close. Tell us a little bit about those goals.
Well, I played football my whole life, and I was pretty good. Led the state of Illinois in rushing. I believe it was in 1989 as a running back, and went on a scholarship to St. Cloud State University, led the nation in punt returns for a brief time, played wide receiver, got a pretty bad concussion at one point, and then that dropped me out of the running for that. I tried out with a couple teams, which just wasn't good enough, and then came home to train horses. Worked for my uncle for a short stint, and decided that I wanted to go on my own sooner than later, and I did, and bought my first horse for $4,000 off of my uncle and won my first race. I think it was at Prairie Meadows in 1999, I think.
Wow.
And then actually won the race. The first race I ran, I won, which that's always one of those, you know, stories. And you get the bug, and this is the greatest thing in the world. And obviously, I had fell on my face 1,000 times after that, thinking to myself, "What am I doing?" But it all worked out. It all worked out eventually in the end.
So many times on this program, we'll ask trainers what their greatest training feat has been, and it might be a horse that people have never heard of. We'll do that later on in the program, but before we do, what would you say your greatest game ever played was when you were growing up and playing football?
Probably in high school. I think I had 5 touchdowns and 368 yards rushing or something crazy like that, and that was during, you know, for 3 quarters, so they took me out after we ran up the score pretty good. That was one of them. And then in college, I think we were playing North Dakota in front of 60,000 people, and I ran the punt back 80-something yards for a touchdown to tie the game, which we ended up losing. But that was one of my shining moments as a collegiate football player anyway. But when you get, man, one thing about that sport is, you know, I was one of the best in Illinois, and I was pretty good on my team, and then I went to a combine. It was like I had no business being there. It was just like a shocking reality. It was just unbelievable. That was the Dante Culpepper, Randy Moss first year in the NFL, and I happened to go to a combine in Minnesota, and they were there. It was just a very humbling experience. It really was. You go in thinking you're the man, and you are like, I had no shot. I knew it instantly.
Is that where you learned about placement?
That's exactly right. That helped me learn about placement a lot. Absolutely, isn't that the truth? That's funny. Yep. So back home, I came with my tail between my legs. But no, I knew it was a long shot anyway. But it was really, when I got there, I knew, and I went a different route. I mean, it was all we could do. I tried. I went as far as I could with, you know, I paid for my education. I got my degree from there. It was a great experience. It was a life experience. And I'm probably fortunate that I still have my wits about me, because, you know, playing another, you know, 7 or 8 years in the NFL would have probably just did me in. It's a pretty violent sport, at least back then. Now it's getting a little bit better. And I don't know my feelings on that as far as they're ruining the game or not. It's hard to tell. But, you know, it's a tough game. It's definitely a tough game. These guys, they move so fast and they're so strong. It's unimaginable for the average athlete, human being, to even realize, unless you're down there doing it.
All right, so compare the thrill of running back a kick and scoring a touchdown in front of 60,000 people to saddling the winner of a graded stakes race.
It's about the same. That's definitely a satisfaction or a high that you get. It's the same type. And it's unfortunate for it, because, you know, you always strive to do good, but when you have addictive personality, or you're, people are always have their quirks about them, as how focused they are and how much, you know, it's like you get addicted to winning. Or doing well. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things. And, you know, when I lose 5 or 6 races in a row, I'm like talking to myself. You know what I mean? It's like where when I first started, if I won, you know, 2 out of 15, I was happy. You know what I mean? But then it snowballs and snowballs, and you do well, and you learn and you change, and you enter in the right spot, and you patch one up, and you make them a winner that you couldn't make them a winner when you first started because you didn't know what you were doing. You know, everything adds up, but it is the same type of feeling. It definitely replaces that thrill of scoring a touchdown. I mean, whether it's a cheap horse, I still get the same rush, which I like. Because, yeah, like you said, I'm off the air, getting one of them cheap ones to win sometimes is harder than getting the tabulator to win.
Yeah.
Talk about that a minute. We'll go ahead and ask you now. What horse did you do such a great job with that nobody even knows?
A horse called Goodbye Greg. It has to be, and it's a recent horse. I bought him several years ago. Probably one of the nicest horses I've ever had. He just always had problems. He has a problem with his foot. He had a degenerative disease in his coffin bone where it kind of just demineralizes. And I get three races a year out of him. No kidding. Three races. He won three last year, turned him out for 8 months. He won three the year before, turned him out for 7 months. He won three the year before, turned him out for 7 months. Now this year, he's 4 for 4. He got 8 months off last year. He brought him back, and he's 4 for 4. He just broke the track record at Presque Isle the other night, and he's won all four races. And, you know, after every race, it's like I go into the barn, you know, with my fingers crossed and my eyes shut, and I reach down and grab his foot and feel it, hoping it's nice and cool and nothing to say. And knock on wood, he came back good. I mean, we have special shoes we put on him after every race. We change his shoes, we glue them on, we take them off, we cut them differently. I've had Black Fly Blacksmiths in from Florida, just to specialize in special type of deals like this. It's like, you know, it's like $1,000 to get the guy here and back, let alone the shoe job just for one horse.
Oh, that's outstanding.
How many people you know are going to do that for a horse that runs three times a year?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Most
owners are going to tell you to jump in the lake, you know?
So how many races have you won with him all together?
I think he's won 7 out of 12.
That's great.
Yeah, that's pretty special.
He's 6 years old, or 8 out of 13 or something like that. And he's going to be 7 now. Just an unbelievable horse. Beauty by Tufflesburg, which is an obscure sire as well, but he's just was a horse I would run in the Breeders' Cup Sprint if he was 100%.
Larry, when you think about the way you started after giving up the football career and then going to work for your uncle Jimmy DeVito, who, by the way, himself has trained over 1,000 winners, you think about starting out with just those four horses and nondescript horses, and to see where you are today, do you ever spend time looking back and just kind of reflecting on how you got here?
No, I really don't. I'm always a look. You know, there's always so much stuff going on and so much stuff to plan for. And you know, in this game, you can only plan so far, because as soon as you start to map out a three race schedule, the horse's head will fall off or something. You know what I mean? Something crazy happens. It never ends up being the way you want it to. You know. So you got to take it race to race most of the time. I mean, you got to have a couple in mind, but you can never put it down on paper and etch it in stone, because something always happens. So, you know, I really don't look back. I'm happy of all my accomplishments, and I'm proud of it. But I pretty much, you know, I don't look back. I look forward. I watch a lot of videos of races. Like when we're done here, I'll watch the whole card of, you know, who I got in and who I ran against and who's running here, and a couple horses to claim, and this guy wants to sell that one, maybe we're going to buy it. And I'll watch the videos over and over and over and over. And I do a lot of that, but not necessarily looking back and reflecting on what I've done, but watching previous races of my horses that maybe didn't run so good last time and I didn't catch it when I watched the race, or I didn't get a chance to watch the replay because the owners were there and we were shooting the shit or whatever we were doing afterwards, and I never got a chance to watch the race, so I'll watch it 3 or 4 times. Maybe we'll pick up something that happened that I didn't know happened, or the jock didn't tell me happened, and then we change it or adjust, or, you know, sometimes you just throw your hands up and chalk it up as a bad race and don't change anything, and everything works out, you know, well the next time.
Is watching films part of your football background?
Yeah, I think so. I like to watch a lot of replays. I really do. Like I can tell you, like in the post parade, like when they're at Belterra and they're running a $3,500 claimer and the guy's dropping the horse from 10,000 to 3,500 and he's 3 to 5, and I can tell you in the post parade, we're not betting that one. You know what I mean? Because I can just tell by the way they warm up how they're doing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Wow. Will you spend much time betting on horses, or is that something you don't do any of?
No, I'll bet, but I used to a little bit more when I had more time on my hands. But you know, occasionally a first time starter if we like them and we know about it. Otherwise, my time's so consumed with everything. Or you know, maybe I'll be walking by Wayne and you like your horse? Yep, and I'll bet $100 on him or something. You know what I mean? And then you know something like that when they're going in the gate or something. I've done that 1,000 times, you know, with just, you know, friends or Wesley. Wesley, he just kills me every year with, he buries me, so I don't ask him anymore. he wins every time he tells me no, and he's unbelievable. You think he's my friend, right? It's funny.
Yeah, he's not your friend. Yeah, I have a friend that's good buddies with Al Stahl, and Al Stahl win a race, pay $14 or something, and I'll call him. I said, did Al Stahl tell you about that horse? He'll say no. I said, he's not your friend.
Well, it just goes to show you, though, that even, you know, the best of trainers, they don't always know, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you believe me. Everybody's trying to do the same thing you're doing out there. You know, they're trying to win. So you don't, at least most of them anyways, but you know, you never know with the next guy. You know, you think Romans, that paid $400,000 for his horse in the stall next to Wesley, you don't think he likes his, and then the next guy doesn't like his. You know, everybody likes him. You know, Wesley's usually better, you know, obviously with the younger horses, the Keeneland, he's spot on. He's just got them ready, and he does a fabulous job with those babies. It's unbelievable what he's done over the last, you know, 5-6 years.
Talking with trainer Larry Rivelli here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Larry, you were quoted once as saying that your grandfather, Pete DeVito, and your uncle, Jimmy DeVito, taught you how to be a horseman. They taught you that part of the game, but you said there's so much more to it now than when they started out. What's different?
Well, like we talked about earlier, I think it's a lot of managing the owners, and it's a lot of you know, nowadays you have so many more racetracks and so many more races to choose from. Back in the day, you didn't have all those options. Maybe you had to run a $10,000 horse for 20 because there was no race, or had to jump a condition because that race didn't go, and the guy's not going to ship from Chicago to, you know, Pennsylvania to run in the exact same, the right condition that they got over there for him. You know, they those types of things, where now we're going to get in the van and we're going to go. You know what I mean? We're going to Indiana Downs, that's 3 hours away. We're going to go to Keeneland, that's 5 hours away. We're going to go to those spots because the race didn't go at Arlington, and I'm not going to enter in a spot where they got no shot to win just because we need to run the horse. I've heard guys say that 1,000,000 times. I'm like, what are you running this, you know, friends of mine, what are you running this horse in this race for? He just got beat for 20. You got him in for 40, you know. Well, there's no race, and the owner, and there's no race, and there's no race. Well, there's a race somewhere. 80,000 tracks running every day. It's got to be a race somewhere, you know what I mean? So that's how I look at it, and other people don't. And I think that was different back then than it is now. There's so many more tracks.
What's the state of racing in Illinois now? Give us the inside scoop.
We've had years of trying to get, you know, obviously what all most of the places have is the slot machines and a casino, and the struggle, that which is beyond you know, it's all political and out of my wheelhouse when it comes to that stuff. But from what I've heard, this year Illinois money has went up just as of last month, and next year at Arlington the purses are supposed to be even better, which is good. And once the Illinois budget is hit and met, they are going to have to do. There's going to be a way that they get a tax, big tax benefit and a reprieve. And the only way to do that is to put a major casino in the city of Chicago, which the bill is tied to getting slot machines and a casino at the racetracks. And when that goes down, which is supposed to be going down in the last 3 or 4 years, when it does go down, it'll just give us a shot in the arm, and everything should be okay. But as of the last year, was not very good at all. This year was a little bit better. Next year is supposed to be better because they did pass, they did free up, I think, $3.4 million worth of breeders, Illinois bred, you know, money for the Illinois bred owners and the Illinois bred horses, which makes all the state bred horses, the races, you know, significantly higher, which is good for us and our home breds now. It really doesn't do much for the, you know, Kentucky breds and all the other people that run from out of state. But it's looking better, but we were told it's been looking better for the last 4 years too, but it actually has a little bit over the last few months. So, you know, I live here, my owners live here, and we're dug in. So hopefully it turns around. Like you said, like I told you before, we can go wherever we want. We live here, but we can go wherever we need to go.
Yeah, it's a good central location to a lot of racetracks, and it gives you a myriad of opportunities that other people don't have. You know, like California is like an island, and other states in the Southwest and stuff, they're pretty much stuck where they are.
And people don't, you got to keep in mind too, you know, I've got 40 people working for me, you know, and these guys have to uproot their families and their kids are going to school. And you know what I mean? It's like, if we pick up and move, or we pick up and go, you know, what do you know, you go here 6 months, you go there 4 months, you go here 3 months. It's like, take your whole operation. It's really, that's why, like I said, I tip my hat to those guys like Pletcher and Asmussen, because you have so many horses. Just moving your whole crew to another track, to Keeneland, for a 30-day meet. It's like a major upheaval. You know, you're going to take your main foreman and you're going to take your assistant. Okay, well, he's got kids, and his wife is your hot walker. And how are they going to get to school? They got to change schools for 30 days? It's like, it's just, you take all that stuff in consideration, then you go, I'm not going to bring him. Now I don't have my best guy there, and you're throwing everything off. You know, it's just a whole thing, that another thing for a trainer to compute, to think about. You know, and then this guy gets mad because he's not going, and he wants to stay home with his family. Why does he get to stay and I got to go? It's, you know, and you're like scratching your head, and you're just, where, you know, and then you got the tabulator going to Del Mar, and this guy wants to go and he can't go, and actually everybody wants to go to the Breeders' Cup, right? So I'm going to send my whole crew for one horse. You know, someone's got to stay home and watch over the ship while we're gone too. You know, it's like, you got all those things to deal with as well, which is, you know, is also, you know, trying on a trainer, and you just have to manage so many things. Like you said, the horse is the easy part.
Yeah, do you keep a second string anywhere, or do you just use your facility in Florida?
I don't. I'm here, obviously, 7-8 months of the year in Illinois, and then I turn a lot of them out. Like, a lot of them are going to Ocala just to turn out for 2-3 months, and then I'll start them back up first of the year. Now, this is the first year I'm going to go to Palmettos, the training center, or Palm Beach Downs, and in the middle there. This way I'm not obligated to run at Tampa or Gulfstream. I can run at either track. Carolyn Wilson resides in Tampa, and she has a lot of homebreds and Florida breds, so we like to run in Florida. And so she can come, so she gets to watch him run. It's kind of her time in the winter in Florida, and then my guy's time in the summer here in Chicago, so.
Larry, earlier you talked about not looking back and looking ahead, and that's how you prefer to do things. Do you allow yourself to think about what the moment might be like if the tabulator crosses the finish line first in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Del Mar?
I haven't really thought about it yet, but it did cross my mind, and I obviously, you know, will be ecstatic, and I don't like to do stuff like that because you know, the mush factor. I hate to think ahead. Is, you know, I'm excited when that horse gets in the gate, then it'll be on. You know what I mean? It's just so much can happen before a race, and I know it. I mean, it's silly stuff. I mean, stuff that's so unforeseeable that when it happens, you just shake your head like, I can't believe this has happened, and it happens more time. You know, it's capable of happening. So just getting them there, keeping them out of harm's way, keeping them sound, having no hiccups, and then that would be the pinnacle of my career, no doubt.
Yeah, like we said,
I should get him on first.
You've been there before. You've been to the Breeders' Cup. What's it like watching your horse walk into the starting gate of a big race like that?
Gets to it, like I told you, I may have lied to you when I told you that, you know, I don't, I'm a nervous type of person, and I really don't. But you can see it. You're sitting there and you're watching and your expression and you're emotionless, but your heart starts beating. You can feel the heartbeat. Your heart starts banging out of your chest, and you're just sitting there and you can just feel it just picking up, and you're just like, okay, let the horse get out of the gate. And then once the race starts, it's like you hold your breath for the whole time of the race. You know, I mean, it's exciting. It's definitely a rush. And if you get there first, which I have not done in the Breeders' Cup yet, I can only imagine what it's going to be like.
Do you watch the other horses, or do you just keep an eye on your horse during the race?
I watch both, actually. I'll watch my horse, and then I'll watch the rest of them to see, just to try to get a gauge of where I'm, you know, of what's going to happen. I'm swearing at my jock at the race because he's probably doing something I don't want him to do. And, you know, and then when he wins, you know, obviously I never tell him that. But Jose rides a lot of horses for me, and I'm a bad guy to ride for. I got to admit it. I'm my hardest critic, and I'm really just, you know, because I expect to win. I'm trying to win every race, and I know how hard it is to win, and I know most jockeys are trying their hardest too. And it's easy to say, why didn't you go here, or why didn't you go there, or what are you doing? I told you to go to the lead, and you stumbled, and you went to the lead anyway. That doesn't mean go to the lead. That means, you know, call an audible if you have to. You stumble. I don't want you on the lead. You got to change your tactics. And Jose's really good about that. He's a veteran rider. He's a smart guy, and he knows. And when I'm all upset and after a race because maybe he made a wrong move, and I know when I put, you know, I'm watching these football games on Monday night. I got a bunch of guys over, and we're watching the game. And he goes, "Look at that idiot! He didn't cut through that hole. The hole was as big as." I said, "Listen, the hole's moving at 1,000 miles an hour. Trust me, I've been there. You know, there's no why didn't he do that? It's a reaction. You know what I mean? It's like until you've been there, you can't. I've never ridden in a race, so it's, you know, I stand corrected most of the time when I get upset about a race, and you know, after 20 minutes later, I'm over it because I've watched the replay and realized I was wrong, and then we go from there.
He's trainer Larry Ravelli. He's our special guest here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Larry, believe it or not, only about 2 minutes left before we have to wrap up the program. Always like to end by letting trainers tell people a little something about themselves that maybe people might not know. So we're going to play a little game here. It is 5 fast facts to know about trainer Larry Ravelli. And I'll ask you 5 questions. You can answer them very quickly and we'll blast right through them, okay?
Okay.
All right, so the first one, we're going to start really easy. Being a former football player, your favorite college and favorite professional football team?
My favorite professional football team? The Patriots, which is probably everybody's. My favorite college football team? North Carolina.
All right. Larry Ravelli done with us here on the show. Patriots, come on, man. All right. Number 2, your favorite football player?
Walter Payton.
All right. Your favorite food, if you could have anything, what would it be?
Pasta.
All right. You can go see one musical artist in concert. Who are you going to go see?
Actually, the best guy I've ever seen play, Elton John.
All right. And last one, your favorite thing to do other than horse racing?
Watch my son play hockey. Very, very good hockey player. 14 years old.
Awesome. We'll have to put you in touch with John Sakura down here, too. Well done, Larry Ravelli. That was a lot of fun, my friend. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. All the best moving forward. We'll look forward to seeing you out at Del Mar with the tabulator.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
All right, Larry Ravelli here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Great guy.
Yeah, good show.
All right. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Thanks for listening.